Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The National Labor Relations Board to Starbucks. Start bargaining with your workers now. Steelworkers in a fight with a giant oil company in California. And today on the show, the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1 in Buffalo, New York. And our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. In a couple of minutes, we're going to link up with Frank DiRizzo. Frank is the president of Local 1 of the United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents about 17,000 members in the state of New York. Altogether, the food and commercial workers represent 71,000 members in the state of New York, including workers at the Buffalo location of what's called the Tops Friendly Market. Yes, the same grocery store where 10 people were killed and 3 were injured on a Saturday afternoon, May 14th, in what police call a racially motivated hate crime. The suspect is in custody. The mass shooting took place in a predominantly black neighborhood where 4 Tops workers were among the victims, all members of Local 1. Frank was on the scene immediately and talked to him last night. And I'll tell you, he is still shaken like so many people are in that area. They weren't prepared for anything like this. And he pointed out, he's going to talk about this on the show today. You know, when you're in the military, they train you for what may happen if you're going to be shot at, post-traumatic stress disorder. He said, you know, when you're bagging groceries or working in the produce market or you're a meat cutter, you don't prepare for that kind of thing. And that's exactly what happened on that Saturday afternoon. It's my understanding that the local is doing monumental work in reaching out to the community to help these workers, many of them who need mental health counseling. That store, by the way, is shut down. And the people in that neighborhood, it's kind of what they call a food desert until Tops decided to locate there. They're busing people to various other stores so they can get their groceries. That's what happened to that neighborhood just a little over a week ago. So Frank DiRizzo will be our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to link up with Tommy Buffenbarger, longtime general president, retired now for about 6 years from the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. And, I'll tell you, there's been a lot of organizing going on with the machinists. We'll touch on that. And also, new contracts. Talked about this not too long ago. Cummins Engine, they got pay raises after nearly 2 months being on strike. 3,000 IAM members at Pratt & Whitney ratified a contract with the job security, strong benefits. Let's see what else we have here. In Puerto Rico, mechanics won a major organizing campaign with the machinists, and IAM members at Hawaiian Airlines overwhelmingly ratified some strong contracts with job protections and pay raises. We're talking about 2,500 machinists at Hawaii Airlines. We're going to spend a lot of time on the railroad industry. And we touched on this yesterday with Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. And this all is tied into the supply chain problem. And Politico, the publication Politico, did a really good story on this. They wrote, in the scramble to bring prices back down, one obstacle is slowly garnering more attention. A decimated railroad workforce, which agency officials say is impeding efforts to transport goods and in doing so, further hobbling an already delicate supply chain. And the article points out, over the last 6 years, Class 1 freight railroads, which include BNSF Railway, CSX Transportation, Kansas City Southern Railway, Norfolk Southern, and Union Pacific, have hemorrhaged a combined 45,000 workers. 45,000 workers, which is about 29% of their workforce. They've cut labor below the bone, according to Marty Oberman, and he's chair of the Surface Transportation Board, and that's the board on the House Transportation Committee. And this all came up at recent hearings. I know Greg was involved in that, Greg Regan. And when you have a labor shortage like this, you have a labor struggle. They're not hiring. They were shut down during the pandemic. Okay? I get that part. Well, guess what? We're still in a pandemic, but we need our supplies. And they're not hiring. There's a lot of focus on this. Hearings have been held, and the needle isn't moving fast enough. I mean, some things are changing, but it's too slow. And a lot of people are complaining that they can't get supplies because of a decimated workforce. So Tommy is going to talk about that and more as our second guest right here on the show. In an amended complaint against Starbucks, the National Labor Relations Board has requested that Starbucks be ordered to bargain with the union at their Buffalo area location after the union had lost an election last year. The complaint accuses the coffee chain of intimidating and retaliating against workers seeking to unionize there. The complaint alters an initial complaint filed weeks earlier, which had already alleged anti-union conduct on part of the company. So now they are accusing the company of packing. What's packing? That is the practice of sending in outside employees in the lead up to a union election in order to dilute union support. Pretty tricky, huh? Now, Starbucks is claiming that the workers were sent to address understaffing. The union is thinking otherwise. Now, mind you, there were several stores in Buffalo that staged a union vote. One did win. The others did not. And that's exactly what they're talking about here. In the meantime, Starbucks is arguing that its captive audience meetings are protected by the First Amendment. That's right. This was an unfair labor practice complaint made by the NLRB's Office of the General Counsel, accusing Starbucks of interrogating and threatening employees in retaliation for their union activity. And right now, the General Counsel at the Labor Board says, no, the captive audience meetings are illegal. So that dispute's going on. They still got to get the full board to agree on that. Last Friday, the United Steelworkers Union filed charges with the labor board against Chevron Oil. This stems from a strike at the company's Richmond, California refinery. According to Reuters, the union alleges that Chevron has changed terms of employment, refused to furnish information, engaged in coercive actions, including surveillance, made coercive statements, and refused to bargain with workers at the refinery. BK White is a vice president of Local 12-5. This is the steelworkers local. BK said no progress has been made in resuming talks with Chevron since the two sides last met across the bargaining table. This was 5 weeks ago. The dispute has been ongoing since 500 workers at the refinery went on strike on March 21st. About 60 of those workers have resumed working, and Chevron continues to operate the refinery with supervisors, managers, and temporary replacement workers. President Biden is encouraging Hyundai's chief executive, Eason Chung, to partner with American Union members, arguing that they are some of the most highly skilled, dedicated, and engaged workers in the world. Hyundai announced on Friday that it's investing $5.5 billion to build an electric vehicle assembly and battery plant that could employ up to 8,100 workers in Savannah, Georgia. Now, here's the problem. Georgia is a right-to-work state. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, only 5.8% of the state's workforce were members of the unions. This is numbers that go back to 2021. President Biden and Democrats have advocated for unionized auto workers to help lead the electric vehicle transition, but it's not clear right now, according to some reports, that this will have an impact on Hyundai's employment decisions. But I got to hand it to Biden for saying that. If he didn't say it, they wouldn't even think about it right now. All right, we are coming up to break time. When we come back, we're going to go to Buffalo, New York, and link up with Frank DiRizzo. Frank is the president of the Food and Commercial Workers Local 1. That's the local at the Tops grocery store that suffered a mass shooting a little over a week ago. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to Buffalo, New York right now. And joining us on line number one is the president of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 1. This is the local that represents workers at the Buffalo Tops Friendly Market, which was the scene of a horrific shooting last Saturday, May 14th. 10 people killed, 3 injured at that grocery store. They do have a suspect in custody, and this was a racially motivated hate crime. Frank DiRizzo, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. How is everybody doing in Buffalo right now, Frank? My God, this was a horrific tragedy. And you're in the middle of it all. So let's just start from the beginning.
You know, Ed, you summed it up right. It was certainly, it was horrific. And it was the most unbelievable thing that I've been involved with in my many, many years in the labor movement. You're used to dealing with grievances, arbitrations, disputes, whatever the case is, picket lines, information lines. But you're never prepared to get involved and see and talk to the people that were there that witnessed this. I can only imagine what they seen in the store for that minute and a half carnage that went on. But it was something that was certainly, it sticks with you. You'll never forget it. And you know the sad situation is the people inside. It's a difficult time for them right now. The employees that were working there are members. They're going through a rough patch right now that's going to take a, a long time to heal.
How many workers in that store represented by your local?
In that particular store, there's 74 members, UFCW members. At that time, I believe there was somewhere between 28 and 32 that were working. And let me also preface it by saying this store is an inner city store. Okay, it's a store that about 20 years ago the community and the union rallied behind because they needed a grocery store, and the faith community and a lot of the community leaders approached a lot of people. You know, it was not just a union, but we were involved with it to try to get an employer to come into town because Wegmans didn't want any part of the inner city stores. So Tops stepped up to the plate. And they put a store in there, and that store is the hub of the community. You know, that's where people go and meet and talk and, you know, socialize outside it and go grocery shopping. And it's a real big part of the community. So that was another, if you were there, you had to see how this community rallied around the people in the store. It was amazing. It was an amazing thing to see, to witness.
Now, that store is shut down. What's happening? Where are people going to shop? And what about the workers there that were there so long?
Well, first I'll talk about the workers. You know, early on, I mean, and I got to say, Tops has been absolutely fantastic with how they've handled things and talked to us and kept us appraised. And, you know, we've been hand in hand with them since this happened with the people. But, that they've agreed that they're going to continue paying them. Needless to say, everything. Nobody's going to lose any money, and nobody's going to lose any benefits. And then at that point in time, when we were there last week, they weren't sure because of the FBI still held it as a crime scene. But the store has been released. Finally, they put barricades up. So what they're going to do, you know, again, keep in mind, this isn't like where it was in Denver and other areas where you had a mass shooting like this in a grocery store, where in Denver, Colorado, I think Boulder, I think it was, they shut that store down. I kept it closed for a number of months. I want to say 6, 7, 8 months. They did a complete remodel, and then they opened it up, you know, and moved the people to other stores until they opened it up. In this case, we don't have that luxury because this is the only store in that area. A lot of these people walk to work and so on. So, what they're going to do is they're hoping, the way I understand it, within 2 to 3 weeks they can reopen the store. And what they're doing now is they're gutting the way they inform me, they're going to change the store completely around, because all the psychologists and doctors said that when you walk into that store, the people that witnessed that carnage, they don't want to you want them to believe they're in a completely different store. You know, and so that's what their goal is, to renovate it, change it, move things around, I imagine, so that when they do reopen, people can go in. Most of the people that I've talked to have said that they're going to go in. There was a couple on the news medias that were interviewed that said, no, we're not, that guy's not going to keep me away from my family, from my store, from my livelihood. But you have a few people there that, you know, are so upset that they witness things maybe more so than others that they just can't go into that store. So we'll see how that goes. The bottom line is, you know, we're going to continue providing counseling for them and whatever the members need in order to try to get themselves into a better frame of mind, or I should say a better health setting, and, you know, within themselves.
Frank, when the shooting happened last Saturday, where were you, and what was your immediate response when you found out about that?
Well, it's something, because my son, I have a son, a younger son, who's 18 years old, and he was graduating, and they had their prom.
Yeah.
So where I was exactly was in my backyard with my son and 8 or 9 of his friends and 8 or 9 of their you know, dates for their prom, and then the parents, and everybody was taking pictures, and I got the phone call, and, you know, I was from a distance, I was looking at all these young men that were in my backyard, and I was thinking to myself, wow, these kids are 18 years old too. How can someone do this? But my immediate reaction when I heard of a mass shooting in a grocery in one of our stores was, and I knew when they said what store it was, where it was. So I, you know, it doesn't take much to, for your imagination to put two and two together and come up with reality. My you know, was that, oh my God, you know, the guy came in and just started shooting my members, people that, you know, I've known, people that have come to meetings. So my first reaction was that it was a bloodbath, you know, it was with our members, and it, you know, and it was terrible. And needless to say, I couldn't get enough information that day. People kept calling me up. And then what I did is I immediately called up my director in Buffalo, because our office was in Oriskany, which, you know, is about 2 hours away. So I called my office in Buffalo and talked to the director, which I called him at home, I should say. And he was on his way down there with his wife and our person that services the store and other guys from the local union. And just to go down there and see what they can do and support the people. But when they got there, you know, there was nothing going on. You know, I mean, you couldn't, let me rephrase that. There was nothing they could do, right? Because the company was there, and the police had gotten the people out of the store and into a bus where they were going to take them to interview them and talk to them.
Now, this was a media frenzy during that time, and it's my understanding that you kind of helped the media talk to some of the survivors of this. Can you give us some details on that?
Yes, a media frenzy is an understatement, if it could be an understatement. And I mean, yeah. Everybody was there. National news, world news. There were stations from France. There was, and again, the scene was for that whole week was just so uplifting to see the community come together like that. They had, keep in mind what I said, there's no grocery stores in that area, so they had trucks on every corner. Tops had trucks, and they were giving away groceries. You had all the community centers and the organizations donating food, and, you know, everywhere. It was everywhere. The Buffalo Bills were there signing autographs. The Buffalo Sabres came down and was signing autographs. It was really heart-wrenching to see how they rallied around that store and the people in that store. The news was involved, was there from, you know, very onset. And, you know, a lot of the people working didn't want to talk. But, when we got there and people, what we did, and I don't know if I said this, the company rented the library out, and they have an auditorium-type room in there. So the counselors told us that the grief counselor said, you want to keep everybody together. So we put them all in there every day. And then every day there was a different thing going on. You know, needless to say, the first day it was the counseling, and the counselors were there constantly. So if anybody needed them, they would talk to them. And then they brought in food and fed them. They brought them grocery bags so that they, you know, they had groceries to take home with them. And so the media was there. And after listening to some of the stories, and you know, you hear the hate that this individual had in him, I felt that, you know, the news media, needless to say, was calling anyway, and I was doing interviews, but they wanted to talk to the people. So I was able to go out and, you know, talk to the few people that were willing to talk to the press. And we had we had two people on the Today Show on Tuesday morning. We had one of our employees on one of our members on Lester Holt Evening News. And then they, you know how that goes. They do a 40-minute clip and then they show it through the week. So, pieces of it. So yeah, there was a lot of people there, and I helped facilitate getting people on there because I thought it was important. Number one, I'm not a counselor, I don't know, but I thought it was important for those people that were involved to continue talking about it and to get the story out so people can hear how heinous and terrible this individual was, and why does society need that? Why do we have to have that type of hatred?
You know, and this goes into the bigger picture. I mean, we're still in this pandemic, and Frank, you know how the frontline workers have been treated during the pandemic. You know, first they were heroes, and now they're zeros. You know, you remember the heroes pay, and these are the people on the front lines that see hate in the workplace almost every day, workplace violence. And this one here, while I'm reading, this is the worst mass shooting in Buffalo history. I mean, it's in the record books now. And this is going to take a long time to unwind and for folks to recover. It's good that they have a person like you at Local One. I mean, you've got a long... How long have you been involved in organized labor, Frank?
Well, I started in 1975 in Pittsburgh. And then I went into Kansas City in 1989. I'm sorry, I went to Texas in 1989 to help on a trusteeship. Then in 1990, there was a trusteeship in Kansas City, and I went in there and then became the president. And so I've been the president since 1990 in UFCW locals, and I've been active. I've been in since 1975. I started as an organizer. But, you know, it's funny you said a hero to zero. I smiled when you said that because I thought we coined that. When during the pandemic, when the company stopped paying the hero pay, like in July, everybody was picketing across, you know, in New York, different locals. So we were out there doing some information picketing, and we on our sign, we had heroes to zero. So I smiled when you said that, Ed, because, you know, that's something we used a lot. But you're right. And what's sad is, as you said, grocery workers were frontline from day one. You know, we've had our share of deaths in local one had, I believe, when it's at this time, we have 5 COVID-related deaths that were from, you know, from getting sick in the stores. You know, we've had many, many meetings with the companies, especially on the onset and that. But it certainly changes negotiations because you go into negotiations with some different proposals that you might not have had prior to COVID. And then on top of that, you go through that. The people, you know, they like you hear them talk about how they go home. They scrub down, especially if they have somebody in the house that's sick. And then you fight with the company with forcing the customers wore masks, you know, so it was an on deal. It was a everyday battle going on in that time period. And then you come into work and you're in a situation where you're susceptible to some nut job who's been, I don't know. I don't want to say taught, but has been infested with this, infected, I should say, with this, this hatred in him. And then he says, well, where am I going to go do the most damage? Well, let me go to a grocery store. Let me go to a retail outlet. Let me go to a Lowe's. Let me go, you know, anywhere where there's retail, where there's a lot of people. And in grocery stores, there's retail and it's a lot of these stores, especially this store, you know, it's not what you'd call your, you know, the normal superstore, a 60,000 square foot store. You know, it's a normal a grocery store, you know, probably a little less than 30,000 square feet. And, you know, you can go in there and do damage. And it's sad because now to give you a perfect example of what your question's about, Ed, the next day, Sunday morning, I had to go up and did my grocery shopping at this one top store in our area. Now, keep in mind, this store's, like I said, 2.5 hours away from the Jefferson Avenue store. And I went in there and early in the morning, and I was talking to needless to say, everybody wanted to talk about it, and I was talking to the deli clerk, and she said to me, Frank, when I came in this morning, the first thing I did when I got back here is I looked and I said, okay, where will I hide if a shooter comes in? So, you know, that's the mentality that you have when you go into the grocery store the next day after that.
Frank, it's so sad that we have to talk about this today. It's amazing. You think that we have grown up. I mean, we've seen what happened in the 60s, the violence then, the Civil Rights Act and legislation, and I don't know. I want to read a statement here from your general president, Mark Perrone, and this is posted on the national website, ufcw.org. And Mark says, it's long overdue for America's elected leaders to take steps necessary to protect our workers and communities from these continued acts of hate and violent tragedies. My question to you, Frank, what do we have to have armed guards in the store? I mean, you talked about places to hide. How do we protect our workers going forward?
Well, you know, Ed, when you say armed guards, you got to keep in mind that a lot of our members and customers were saved by the retired officer that was there. His name was Aaron Slater, and he was a 30-plus-year veteran of the Buffalo Police Force. He retired a little while ago. And you know, he went to work as a security guard, and the police told me that when that man, you know, he started in the outside where customers were in the parking lot. I think there was three bodies there, and then when he came inside, the minute he walked in the door, that officer would have dropped him. He hit him twice, dead on, both kill shots, for lack of a better word, I guess. And but because he had that military-style body armor on, the bullets didn't penetrate. So as far as armed security, you know, they were there in this particular case. And it wasn't don't mistake in what I say, like a rent-a-cop or a young individual. It wasn't something like that. This was a man with experience that was a marksman, and he did his job. The problem is, where did this kid get military-grade body armor at 18 years old? You know, and as you said, what do we do? I did one interview, and I said, someone said, well, what's the union's position on gun control? I said, listen, you know, I'm not anti-gun. I'm anti-killing machines. I'm anti-having someone have the ability to get body armor. Someone, what do you need body armor for? I'm anti-somebody getting a weapon that can fire, and I don't know, I'm not much on guns, to be honest with you, but they can fire 50 or 70 bullets in 30 seconds. Why do you need that for protection? That's what has to be done. But I prefaced it by telling this one reporter, I said, you know, I'm usually a very optimistic person when it comes to, you know, legislation and trying to work things out. But I have to tell you, on this issue, I'm very pessimistic, because I'll never forget where I was in 2018. I was sitting right where I'm sitting now, as a matter of fact, at a Dunkin' Donuts. And I remember seeing it on television and thinking to myself, this is going to be a game changer. This will be a game changer as far as gun control and access. And because, you know, and what happened? Had nothing. So when 18 or 20, I think, beautiful little children can be mutilated, 6- and 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds could be gunned down and go to school one day and don't come back, and that doesn't change things, then I'm not very optimistic, about you know, someone taking the lead or someone on the right turning around and saying this is wrong, you know, or standing up to the NRA and gun lobbyists. But, you know, I don't know. You know, Ed, I know one thing, just like anything else in life, you can't stop trying. You have to keep pushing forward. You have to keep trying to make a dent in the side of the building.
Well, Frank, you hang in there, my brother. Like I said, that community is lucky to have you with your long experience working in labor relations, your union history, Local One. Certainly union strong, no doubt about that. Local One of the United Food and Commercial Workers, ufcw.org. Check the national website for that statement from Mark Perrone, their general president. Well, hang in there, my brother. Thanks for taking time to talk to us here on America's Workforce. Our thoughts and our prayers going out to you and the whole Buffalo community, okay?
Well, and I want to really thank you and your people for putting this together, because, as I said, you know, as I told the people, remember, this goes away, you know, the atmosphere out there. You know, the community support will stay there, but not like it is now. And then these people are going to be by themselves. And that's why Local One, we're not going to leave their side. I got a people constantly in there constantly. I got an individual that's going to contact them every day to make sure everything's okay. We'll service the store. But we need to have these stories out like this, because, as you said, what's going to change? The only thing that's going to change it is everybody continuing to talk about this. And the sad thing is, it happens, you say, oh, my God, but then you don't think about it until it happens in your community and in your workplace. Then it's a different situation. So I thank you again for covering this, Ed, and I appreciate all your support.
Frank DiRizzo, Local One President, Food and Commercial Workers out of Buffalo, New York, at the Tops Friendly Market. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. And keep in mind that this next segment is brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org, the national website. Let's go to Maryland right now, and joining us on line number two, one of our longtime regulars, and I'm talking about Tommy Buffenbarger, now our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. And as I indicated at the beginning of the show, there's a lot of good things happening with the machinists, bad things happening with the railroad industry. Tommy, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
We're doing great today, Flash, and I'm glad we're going to talk some more about railroads because it's people do not understand how much we rely on them.
And I have to thank you because a couple of months ago, I want to say it was the February show, that you pretty much broke the news about what was happening with BNSF Railway. And it's happening at a number of railways. And the big problem here is Wall Street. We have seen how Wall Street hedge funds have virtually hollowed out the middle class and much of America. And this is a prime example. So, Tom, give us an update here on what you're hearing as far as the workforce and, I guess, the reluctance by these hedge funds to hire more workers. What's the problem here?
The problem is they want more profits and they want fewer employees at a time, Flash, when people can't get food on the shelves. And think about this. How does the baby formula, which is a very topical subject right now, how does that get from the manufacturer to your local grocery store shelves? It all gets shipped around the country on rails. And we want to pin the fact that there's something wrong in America, something wrong with our government, because people can't get food for their babies in their stores. It has nothing to do with your government. Certainly it doesn't have anything to do with the president. It has all to do with Wall Street, corporate executives, guys like Warren Buffett, who want to make a profit off your pain. Now, it's not just baby formula. It's we're supporting a nation fighting for its freedom in Ukraine. And all that military hardware that's been in the news that we're going to send there all gets shipped to ports or to airports through rail because this is big stuff. Ammunition, you know, a cannon round isn't the same size as a rifle bullet. So it's all got to be shipped. It gets through on rails. Then we talk about our grain. You know, with the war in Ukraine, it ties to America because they grow, I think they're the fourth largest provider of grain to the world. They help feed the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to pick that up. Where they can't ship their grain, people will look to the U.S. to buy our grain, which is sitting in silos and storage areas right now, and the farmers I know want to sell it. All that gets shipped by rail to different ports and taken to other countries. So we have not just Americans and our friends and neighbors, it's the whole world depend upon a reliable American rail system. And Wall Street has stepped in the way of people living familiar lives. And this has got to stop. Congress does have to intervene now and get involved in this. There's a system that was installed a number of years ago called PSR, Precision Scheduled Railroading. It was one man's idea, adopted by all the major railroads in America, on how to do more with less employees, less investment into the equipment they need to maintain the railroads. And it was all about putting more money in the pockets of executives of railroads in the form of profits at everybody else's expense. All the major railroads have adopted this system, and we're seeing it collapse before our eyes. Unions, all the unions told the companies, this was a bad move, don't do it. They rushed to do it. And now, by the latest count, Flash, since the pandemic, 45,000 railroaders have left their job. That's a lot of people.
Yep.
For the four main railroads. 45,000 people left good-paying jobs with great benefits because they couldn't stand it anymore under the schedules they were working, because there's so few of them left that they're leaving, and the rail companies can't hire enough people to replace them because of the draconian, it's almost barbaric, employment policies they have on there, whether it's their attendance policy or their scheduling policy. The list goes on. In short, everything I've just said is the railroads have managed themselves into a crisis that's only going to get worse in this country if we don't wake up and take some action. And it's time that this idea of profit at any expense be thoroughly reviewed, and it needs to be stopped. There has to be something in the will of America that the benefit, the best interests of the people, the welfare of the citizens should come first and foremost.
It's my understanding, Tom, that they're not even talking to the union. These hedge funds have a history of doing that. I noticed that with Warrior Met Coal, that strike going on for over a year now. And you mentioned the 45,000 workers that have left. I'm reading that BNSF is trying to hire 1,800. Let's see, Union Pacific, their goal is to hire 1,400, and Norfolk Southern say they're saying 850. Well, if you do the math on that, if you add up those numbers, that's about 4,000. There's 45,000 that left. So do they think the 10% of the people that left is going to help the situation?
I'm laughing, Flash, because you get the math, but these people who are making billions in profits through the term of the pandemic can't figure that out. And it's not going to be enough. And every American can see the effects of this every day. People have commented this in passing, had nothing to do with a conversation about working for a railroad. But how much longer they wait at intersections with railroad tracks? That's because the trains now that used to run about 3,000 feet, maybe, let's say not quite a mile. Now, trains are 10,000 feet.
Ooh.
So that's 2 miles, roughly, of train. You're waiting longer at the intersection because the trains are over twice as long, and that's how these railroad geniuses figure they can make up for fewer trains and less employees. And I want to compound that by, the Machinist Union represents the people on the rails who repair and maintain all those locomotives and all those trains. Well, they're way down in employment right now. There's not enough people to take care of maintaining the equipment we have, and they want to reduce it by more people?
Yeah. Yeah,
something wrong with this picture. We're going to get caught in a situation that's really bad.
Well, we're already in that situation. It's just going to get worse. There's no question.
Oh, Tom, much worse.
Tom, I got to take a quick break. Tom Buffenbarger on our live line, our independent labor voice. More to come right after this. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Tom Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and our independent labor voice. Tom, I want to talk about organizing and also winning at the bargaining table. I referenced a couple of stories here. Cummings, Pratt & Whitney. Let's see. Here's one. Mechanics in Puerto Rico. They won an organizing campaign with the machinists. And Hawaiian Airlines. Let's see. 2,500 machinists overwhelmingly ratified 5-year contracts with Hawaiian Airlines recently. And they're saying the workers won the best job protections and largest pay raises for clerical and related agents, as well as ramp, aircraft, and ground support equipment mechanics in the airline's history. good things are happening. I know we talked about the railroad industry, but let's be positive here a little bit. What do you think's at play here, Tom? I mean, you're a longtime labor guy, 50 years with the machinists and then some. What's your take on what's happening in America right now?
Well, flash with the airlines, it's they're seeing such a rebound in air traffic demand that and they've just come off a bad time for 2 years through the pandemic. The companies understand if they're going to rebuild and remake air travel in America, they've got to have the employees to do it, just the opposite from the railroads. So we're seeing hiring, and we're seeing a willingness at the bargaining table for these companies now, actually, in many cases, to make up for lost ground from previous years, when maybe they thought they had the advantage at the bargaining table. So now it is happening all over. Hawaiian Airlines for sure, and I'm very pleased with that news because those are great members there. And then at Pratt & Whitney, where right now, and it occurred at Lockheed earlier in the year, who makes fighter jets and military equipment. Pratt & Whitney makes a lot of engines used in our military's capabilities. And I think the company, which was always a tough company to deal with, realized there's a tremendous demand for their equipment, their jet engines. There's also a lot of uncertainty throughout the globe. And now's not the time to go to war with the employees. So they managed to craft together a great agreement, and a lot of kudos to that team for doing that. And we didn't have to strike this time to get a little bit of recognition. The company coughed it up pretty much early on. So this is continuing, and the spillover from these success stories in collective bargaining is being paid attention to by people who currently don't have a union and are now realizing there's a big benefit to it. So, you know, we mentioned Apple stores. Mm-hmm. Those employees now see the benefit of belonging to a union, having collective power versus, you know, no power, and that it pays a dividend for them in a better way of life and better conditions at work. And overall, it's going to make the company a little better, because when you're a customer greeted by a happy employee, it's a good thing. And I just wish the railroad executives would pay attention to that.
But, really?
Everybody else is getting it now. Yeah. So I think all the news I get on a daily basis, the labor news, almost every union is seeing a spirited growth in membership through organizing again. And it's also causing, I think, the labor movement in a good way to reevaluate what it takes to organize workers again. And so we'll see, maybe the labor movement will more quickly catch up with what people want and need these days. And that's a good sign.
Yeah, there's a lot of grassroots action going on from the bottom up instead of the top down. And we've talked about this on the show with various guests, including the guests we had on yesterday from the UE, the Electrical Workers Union out of Pittsburgh. And it's all good. It's all good. And it's good to see this, especially in your retirement, Mr. Buffenbarger, because you have a long history of labor unrest over the years. So that's certainly a good thing. All right, I'm going to have to leave it on that note. Tom Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice here on America's Workforce. You take care. Stay safe. We'll do this again next month, okay?
Absolutely, Flash. Best to you and all your listeners.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Heat and Frost Insulators and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.